We have a guest. Let me turn up the levels real quick. Okay, we're back. Hello, everybody. We're back.
Hello.
Be careful. And we're here.
That was a bit of a callback from Monday when we listened to that song.
We listened to that song. And
finally, we can finally express ourselves fully. And I did.
And you did. And you... Beautiful cover. I don't know the other host was thinking.
No. Me neither.
Just to clarify, we are expressing ourselves. We are no way expressing Laurier as a university.
No, we
this
are
is,
not.
This is our, purely our
words and actions do not reflect the opinions and values of Laurier University.
This is our self-expression. Yes,
this
yes.
Is ours.
as said by the NDA that we signed.
By the 40-page contract that we signed, we have to be legally obligated to.
We have a guest.
Is that a Baron Opelhawk moment right now, guys? Can we take the moment just to wonder, just to theorize? Oh. Is this a Baron Opelhawk?
is the downward spiral lore seeping into
the real world?
Real world. I will say this. I do owe Dom my second child.
I will say that the downward spiral takes place in a world that is an intersection of our world
it's
and another.
Very
so,
true.
So I mean, very reasonably, this
are
world.
Are we gonna go fight Knowles?
Maybe Knowles will fight us. I mean, it's the opposite here. Maybe the rats are killing us.
Wow.
Everyone who didn't get the reference, welcome back. We're here with...
Let's quick little introduction. Just say your name, say your major, say who you are as a person, as a character, and say what you're holding.
Your greatest fears. Your greatest fears.
Yeah, so...
Mother's maiden name, social security number. Yeah.
Hey, guys. Address. I'm so honored to be a member of the show. So honored, in fact, that I've brought myself a toast just for this little speech. Yeah. Oh, and, you know, Daniel has his toast, too.
Say your name. Say your name first.
I am Paul.
Kevin Paul.
Kevin Paul. Paul Stibnik, if one were so inclined. And I'm here joining you guys just to shoot the shit. Oh, shoot the donkey. Donkey stuff. Shoot play, the... Shoot
play the jingle. We have a jingle now.
After
class with Dan and Dong.
After class with Dan and Dong.
And then I wish I could have like the little children say hooray in the background.
Hooray. Hey, we can record it right now. Live
no,
on
hold
here.
On. We can actually get audio from you. I figured this out recently. Watch this.
Oh, from YouTube.
So we just go to YouTube, we go here, and we go to
children cheering.
Children cheering.
You know what's crazy? Dom has a YouTube ad called Ready to Chat Singles Online.
What?
You not see that?
Where? Yeah. Meet ready to chat singles
what?
Online.
No, you guys could.
In his suggested videos.
Not children singing, Jesus.
children shouting hooray, dude.
You're children shouting hooray.
Hooray. I mean, that's not how you spell it, whatever. FX, there we go. Advertisement, no
say
free
goodbye
promo.
To messy invoices.
No free promo on this show, all right?
Oh, but the volume's down.
Here we go, ready?
There it is.
There it is.
They have that audio, like, that's like the same audio they use on FNAF.
Yeah. it's roll to free. Won't get in trouble for that. Let's switch it here, let's put it here. Ready? Hold on. No one said anything? Perfect.
Perfect. I think it might have caught the mouse click, though.
Ah, who cares?
Who cares?
Okay, back to my introduction. I would round off with my little concoction here. We've heard of Pilk. We all know what Pilk is. For those of us that are maybe a little less educated, I'll... Quick explanation. Pilk is a 50-50, one-to-one, of Pepsi and milk. This is a drink that you can make, dear viewer, dear listener, at home, right now.
DIY, do it yourself.
Yeah,
do it without parent permission first, though.
No, yeah. this is some moonshine tier stuff.
Let's all have this experience together. So
ask your parents before doing this.
I, as the, you know, the intuitive little MacGyver man that I am, I... realize that we did not have Pilk. We don't have Pepsi. We don't have milk. But what we do have is Coke Zero and coffee creamer. And I gotta say, there's a good curdle. There's a nice little consistency. The smell is...
It's a bit more creamy. You don't taste the milk.
He stuck his nose in there.
But, wait. Let me,
He's a bartender. He knows what he's doing.
So there are hints of Coke and hints of creamer.
Now, elaborate on that. How does the milk curdle in your mouth?
Yeah, so...
How's the mouth
feel? Imagine the amount of... Imagine if you took every single bubble of carbonation from a McDonald's Sprite and turned those into milk curds. But kept the carbonation.
And now there's zero listeners. We're now all alone.
No, it is an amazing drink. It is an amazing experience. Let's just... I urge anyone and everyone to try it at least once.
The chicken ate was raw.
Uh-oh.
You're epic.
Oh, no. Right. He's going to take...
My to hop on his headphones. Can I?
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Paul gets headphones.
Ooh. Get his headphones for just a second. Today, we might probably go off in several hundred thousand tangents, but just to keep us a little bit grounded, let me hold that for you. As you get that cable, there you go.
There we go. Oh.
To keep us a little bit grounded today, I have played one and a half video games recently.
Well, I could also throw in my 2 cents of video game knowledge.
Oh, absolutely. If you want to give your own video game take, if you want to put your own video game on display, then absolutely. But today, mainly, we're going to be talking about Helix.
Ooh, Helix. What's that about?
What's Helix, you may ask? I'm glad you asked!
That is not how I thought you'd spell it.
Helix is a role-playing video game developed and published by Mason Lindroth. It was released on Windows on October 2nd, 2015, mm-hmm. on Steam and itch.io.
Right. Let's just take an opportunity right now to
I have my own video games on itch.io.
Yeah, let's have a little game for all of our viewers out there. On the count of 3, we're all going to spell the name of the game together. Yeah, y'all ready? 3, 2, 2. One, let's go. H-Y-L-I-C-S.
Very good, children.
Very, very interesting spelling. Because me personally, I would think H-E-L-I-X, but
well,
I mean...
Could be anything, really. The English language is very, very malleable, in my humble opinion.
Vast.
But it's quite a vast and complex system of... Terrible, terrible pronunciations of constants and groupings of constants and vowels. I don't know what he's doing in there. He could be...
Yeah, Chad, are we... Do we have a...
Chad,
do we have a camera inside the bathroom just to make sure this man's all right?
Yeah, I don't know if we should get, like, a helping crew in there just to suss it out or something.
Yeah.
But either way, let's quickly dive in... Helix. But before we do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I was just wondering, so recently I've been looking back through my Steam library and just taking a look at the games that I maybe haven't really been appreciating through the years, and I have rediscovered, stumbled upon this beautiful treasure trove.
That's
a little funny. Of a game called Trove, actually.
Whoa.
Very fun game, and I have spent upwards of $500 over about 5 years of playing the game on this. Now,
you know what's crazy? I remember this game.
Yeah, yeah.
I played this game when I was in grade 5.
Everyone has played this game at some point in their life. It's, if you took World of Warcraft
and
blended
it
with
Minecraft.
Yeah, World of Warcraft with Minecraft, but it plays more like World of Warcraft and feels more like Roblox than anything.
Yeah, and I've seen so many YouTubers play this game.
Yeah. I have at least 7 different types of dragons, and that is not even counting the ones that are spherical in shape.
That was $500 he spent on
dual.
This game. $500. I have not spent that much in my total collection of video games up to this point.
Yeah, dual in quantity and on your face in location.
Yes.
Dragon.
Dragon. Who comes up with this stuff, am I right? That's crazy. I've seen Ethan Gamer TV play this game. This game's an enigma.
It is.
I can't wrap my head around it.
The game is weirdly fun, but it looks so ugly. and
it looks so bad.
It looks plays, like it plays horrendously.
Like Pixel Gun 3D on the App Store.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That kind of thing. Like it looks bad.
It feels like it would be designed by that one guy that did, you know, Crab Game and Muck and all those fun ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, but honestly, it's one of those games that you got to play at least once in your life, and you got to not spend $500 on it. But
and not fall into the spiral.
Later tonight, I will be going back to my place, and I will be streaming this game on Twitch. So if anyone wants to see what $500 worth of equipment from back in fucking...
Look, he's got to pay it out somehow. He's got to get back his money.
Yeah, I got to make my money's worth. But 2019... Those were the days that I was playing the game religiously. Oh, no, 2018 maybe, 2018. Too. Yeah, 2018. So if you want all of the fanciest lore, not lore, all of the fanciest gear and tools and stuff.
Loot, tips, tricks.
Yeah.
Dragon.
Veil. That brings around to my next obsession. So recently, I have been playing Dragon Veil. Now, I know you're going to say, oh, is that like the Dragon City ripoff? No. Dragon Veil actually released in 2012 on iOS, 2013 for Android. Dragon City, on the other hand, was released in 2014, I believe, for iOS and Android.
This is actually correct, because you know why I know? Because in 2012, there was a recess monitor who was patrolling the place, and because I had no friends, I used to just stick around that guy.
Yeah.
And we became best of friends, and he loved Dragon Veil.
Yeah.
He played the absolute crap out of Dragon Veil.
Yeah, but let's take this opportunity right now to just like crunch some numbers and really think about what that means for the gaming scene. So Dragon Veil was around for a whole two whopping years before Dragon City was even conceived. Now, You might want to really turn to your friend right now and say, buddy,
I know you are
stupid right now for telling me all about how Dragon City came first and how that's the original game. But I urge you right now, we do not want war. We do not want violence. There's enough bad stuff going on in the world right now. So what I want you guys all to do is open up your app store.
Yes.
Be it like the Apple app store or the Android app store. Just open up your app store. Mm-hmm. Download Dragon Veil. Then what you want to do is you want to go to friends and add friends, invite friends, and you want to add Zagster, Zaggster, number 4291. So what this does for us, and this isn't an MLM, I have to preface this right now.
Correct.
What this does for us is we can become friends and send each other daily gems. Now, a daily gem is a very powerful thing because the gem system in this game is the ultimate currency, You can spend gems on anything.
Now, Paul, let me ask you something right now. You did not come to my show. You did not come to my turf, my territory, just to plug your Dragon Veil. He's ruining the show!
No, I get one shameless plug. I am done with my shameless plug.
That was like three, in my humble opinion.
No, Pilk is not a plug. It's
you
an experience.
You plug Pilk, you plug Trove, you plug Dragon Veil.
Okay, I am now done. Let's get back to our original.
Our original
Helix,
topic.
Right. HYLICS.
Helix is a funny little game because the game itself is making fun. It's a parody of a typical RPG game. You know how you like it's all claymation, right?
Right.
It's like your Wallace and Gromit.
Could we pull up some photos?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yeah. It's very stylized and it's very trippy.
Right.
So Helix, let me just spell it correctly.
HYLCS.
HYLCS.
HYLICS.
You guys know it at this point.
Yeah.
All right, let's pull up some good footage. Yeah.
Oh, that is a beautiful game. That is stunning.
Yeah, look at this. Look at this beauty.
Yeah, you guys can really feel the beauty through the audio.
Look at that. They're making little sandcastles. Look, he has a little guitar in his hand. And they are all little claymation, deep-fried images of things that he made in the real world.
That is nice. Okay.
It's so stylized. All the sound effects make me have a headache, but a good headache, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Makes me feel like I'm phasing through realities, and take a look at this, right? Take it all in, because Helix is an RPG. It was made in RPG Maker.
Mm-hmm.
Now you know what RPG Maker is. It's one of those tools that people want to make video games, but they don't have no
damn clue how to code.
Like the video game equivalent of Flash.
Yeah. Exactly, yes. Yeah. Except, you have to know animation in order to use Flash, but the thing is with this is that...
You just drag and drop.
Just learn Python! Come on!
Exactly. Sorry. I mean, I wouldn't really be predisposed to Python had I been in a situation where...
Yeah, I got a little... That would be my... I'm sorry, I just... Look, sometimes when people... They just make me upset when they just like, I can't code. You just learn algebra.
You know who...
Just learn algebra.
You know who wouldn't be able to learn Python?
Who was that?
Maybe some rats or small rodents.
Small rodents don't have the brains to... Yeah, I absolutely agree. But the thing is that small rodents also
they'd
don't
be scared
care.
Of Python.
They're not listening to their show right now. I hate the...
Small rodents would be scared of Python. So, I think I'm gonna drive Dominic insane by the end of this episode. So let's keep going on the... I would like to say one last thing, though. Whoever designed this game is the Van Gogh of our generation.
Oh, absolutely,
This is the Van Gogh of video games.
He's more of a, you know, the melting clock guy. Who's the melting clock guy?
Salvador Dali.
That's the guy, yeah. He's the Salvador Dali of game design, in my humble opinion. Like, he has these really surrealistic gamescapes. All the power-ups are, like, Gloopy Scloop, Pobbledorf.
Mm.
Like, those kind of things. Like, it's all meant to be a kind of... satirical analysis of itself, you know?
Right, yeah.
Like, for example, you know, in a normal video game, normal RPG, you go up to, like, a trash can, and then you look into the trash can, and you say, welcome back! Can you give me just a quick little recap of what happened in the...
Yeah, we need a walk
other dimension that you travel to.
Because you are out of breath now.
Yeah, I need to know. You walked out of a psych ward.
So, I made myself some drumsticks before I got here. In the air fryer. And I thought I was good. I thought I cooked them for long enough.
Yeah.
That was a Category 4 hurricane erupting out of my backside. I call it a complete evacuation.
Hey. Look, I would call it something else if you couldn't swear on the show.
Yeah,
but
one thing that I would appreciate about the fact that, you know, you were eating drumsticks is... I mean, it really seemed like you were filled.
I thought you ate your drum, like, you ate the wooden drumsticks that you hold
like,
everywhere
seemed
you
like,
go.
Seemed like a drum fill.
Oh, you comedian, I commend you on that, sir. Oh, that's a good ass. It's a good handshake.
Yeah, it's going to be a cooldown until I have another manic episode. So
I just,
fine, you know.
I have never been in so much pain in my entire life.
Hey, wait until the kidney stones, buddy.
I lost matter.
Do you guys have kidney stones?
Oh my god. I had to waddle back to set. All I could hear was yelling, and I heard you ruin our goddamn show. If I could not...
Hey, brother.
I'm seeing stars.
Hey.
The daylight broke, and you were out of it, brother.
If you're seeing stars, that just means that you made it up.
That means you went up.
That
joke
means,
end.
That means that you are up. You are at the peak, at the highest point of your life, if you're seeing stars.
You ever get high taking a shit?
Oh, wait, that's the wrong one. I need the sensor.
Is that the kids going,
yay!
No, that's this is the one. Going, yeah.
You ever go high taking a fat dump? Yay! Yay! No, I'm actually dizzy. Unironically, I'm actually dizzy.
Yeah. Do you have those, like, little speckles in your vision?
Not even, but I feel like my head's just gonna... I feel like I'm gonna keel over and die.
You know what helps when your head hurts?
Ice-cold glass of Kilk.
Ice-cold champagne.
Makes the visions go away. Makes the wall stop screaming.
Oh, so you're talking about, like, anti-games, right?
The game.
Kind of, yeah, anti-games. This game doesn't really play as an RPG, because you just, like... You either die one hit, or you're so overpowered, you stomp everything out.
You know, that actually reminds me of a... Of another anti-game that is an RPG.
Mm.
I think it's called Onigiri.
Oh.
Onigiri.
Can I search it up real quick?
Sorry. Dom showed me this game earlier, Helix. It actually looks really cool. It reminds me a lot of, like, those, like, derealization videos on Instagram where it's like, oh, you're exploring so-and-so, and then it just glitches out.
I think you're talking about Omomori.
No.
There we go.
Whoa.
Nope.
What happened there? There we go.
Ooh.
I think Omomori.
I am in...
No.
Severe amounts of pain.
But you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Onori?
Something
like that.
Omori. That's,
I've heard, I've seen clips
of
it.
I've been recommended this game so much, and it's like, it's the game that literally, it's not hard or sad, but there's so much to it. That
It is a very sad game. It is,
I know it's sad, but I didn't, but I the way it was described to me is, like, it's sad not in that there are tragic things happening, but it's like, it's a slow burn sad.
Yeah, so, Omori, I have played a little bit of this game. I think I got about halfway through. It's an anti-game in the sense that it plays like a game, it feels like a game, but it's one of those indie games that prioritizes the story so much that it feels less like you're playing a game and it's more like you're going through the steps of a story.
Yeah, except you are the one that's controlling it and you can make the actions and choices.
You know, have you watched Bandersnatch or read Bandersnatch?
I've seen clips of it.
What is Bandersnatch?
So Bandersnatch is a Netflix original.
But it's the same universe as Black Mirror, right?
Yeah, so it's an episode of, it's like a standalone Black Mirror film, Black Mirror episode, but it is an interactive Netflix episode.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a show in which you get to...
Oh, it's like a choose your own adventure.
Yeah, so it's an episode where you choose your own adventure, and it follows the story of a character trying to adapt a game, a book, into a game. So it's a choose your own adventure story book, like a novel, and he wants to adapt it into a video game. But this is taking place in the 80s. This is like the 8-bit era. So nothing that he's trying to come up with can fit with, like, just like the computational power isn't high enough for him to truly pick different, like, options to create, like, a web of outcomes.
Right.
So it's, since it's Black Mirror, it definitely has, like, this dark kind of feeling to it.
Fiction.
Yeah. Like, dystopian feeling to it. And it's super interesting because one of the endings that you can get is the ending in which he realizes that nothing is ever truly in your control. And I mean, this is only, like, within the show.
You
can have that philosophical view. I personally don't. But it's very interesting seeing how he decides that nothing is truly in your control because he read through the book and he realized, hey, I could make this game run, and I could get it done within the time frame that I have to finish this game if every single path takes you to the same outcome. And the coolest thing is, after you've unlocked that ending to the episode, every single ending that you then reach, you can reach them all, but they will all have an added extra scene where it's like a little twist where it's like, oh, you didn't actually, like, make this decision because it always ends
goes
in...
It
always...
That's really... I'm kind of sad you spoiled that for me, but that's really cool.
That's really cool.
Well, I'm super vague with it, so you'll still really enjoy it if you watch it.
Okay.
It doesn't quite go back to the beginning, but it's very interesting the way that everything ties together. And Omori kind of feels like a very similar game in the sense that, sure, you're making decisions, but every time... I think that you clear a section or you die, you end up back in the exact same spot. It's this white room, no walls, no paths. You just wander in circles until you find another place to go. I just think it's super cool.
You know, the way you described it, it's definitely a bit far-sighted from what you just described as an anti-game. But what that really reminded me of is, like, you're following along a story instead of just actually playing the character.
Mm-hmm.
The one game that comes to mind is Sally Face.
Very Sally Face-esque.
Like, initial thought, probably not, but you're not actually, there's, like, yes, there's puzzles and you're fighting stuff, but everything you do within the game, it brings you to a specific direction.
Exactly.
Everything. Is it okay if I spoil it?
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Before you go, I just wanted to say, this is the most games we've ever covered on the show.
Oh, no,
ever.
It's great. I love it. Like,
no, this is what it's all about. You tie it all together, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I did try playing the game,
mm-hmm.
and to be completely honest with you, there was one part that I just couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. I couldn't. Mm. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Like, emotionally intense, or like,
yes.
It was just
emotionally intense?
Yeah.
I just couldn't do it. And I ended up watching the rest of the playthrough online.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the part where...
Spoilers ahead.
I don't know, like, I forget his name, but it's the older brother... Because Sally and his dad, and then there's the owner, and then there's, like, the custodian and her son.
Right.
The dad and the custodian get married, so this character that you meet who lives in the basement of the building becomes your older brother.
Mm-hmm.
Or Sally's older brother.
Yeah.
And he ends up discovering that his dad didn't die, and that he... Because there was no... Like, at some point, there was, like, figuring what happened to his dad. And there was an entire scene where... they figured that out, and that was like, you were always going to end up there because there's nothing else. There's no other choices. You are following a story there. You're always going to end up to the conclusion that this person takes that big of a mental hit that later on they end up taking their own life. And that is a situation that you can never, ever avoid because it'll always bring you in that direction. There's no other choices. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how Omori is, but like...
Omori is very similar in that regard.
Okay.
You're solving puzzles and you can do things out of order, but it's not about the order in which you're doing things.
It's where you get to.
Yeah, because, I mean, little trigger warning right now, sort of trigger warning spoiler.
Oh, I should have said trigger warning.
Yeah, Omori is a pretty emotionally intense story. It's about, touches on suicide, it touches on just like depression and negative thoughts, but the story of Omori centers around the main character Omori, and it's all kind of happening in his head, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the blank white space that you end up at every time you restart, that is essentially like his mind palace, his psyche, the inside of his head. And I mean, I might be a little rusty because I haven't played this game in years and I never even finished it, but there's a lot of kind of flashbacks where sections of levels are actually him going through memories. And so, I mean, it doesn't make sense for you to be able to make multiple choices when you're going through a memory, but like you've played games where you're going through flashbacks and memories.
Yes.
Like you go through it and it's very obvious that you're supposed to get from point A to point B and, you know, pick up maybe small things on the side, but the entire game kind of feels like you're getting from point A to point B to point C and you're just watching this guy go through all the steps of, you know, all the steps of loss, like denial, wrath, you know, bargaining, acceptance, all that fun stuff. And it's just really cool. I think the coolest thing about games like this...
Oh, it's the 5 stages of grief.
Yeah, the 5 stages of grief. So I'm definitely going to have to brush up on it, but I think...
It's like anger, bargaining, something, depression, and acceptance.
Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance.
Sorry, I was going to get to something earlier.
Yeah,
of course. The part that I couldn't do is at some point, like, this big demon possesses the entire building, and you spend the entire time meeting them, and it's very off.
Dude, is that a Chainsaw Man reference?
No, not exactly, because, like, there are kids, the people, like, they create families, like, Sally's dad gets married, and then Sally, like, basically gets a message from somebody, and he has to kill everyone, like even the kids, and the realization hit me, and I'm like, I can't do that.
You know what that reminds me of? Oh, I played Undertale. I think 2 years.
I was gonna bring that up. Yes, Undertale. Yeah.
This
oh my
is
god,
finally the time.
It's gonna keep going back to Undertale. I love Undertale because you can make the choice.
Yeah.
But the thing is, once you make that choice, you can never ever go back.
Yeah, you can't go back. I played Undertale. The first time I played through Undertale, I played pacifist because I knew that if I went genocide, I would never be able to get true pacifist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I go through pacifist, play through this game. I think I was playing for a week, maybe. I was going like nice and slow, pacing myself so I would enjoy the game and wouldn't get burnt out. I finished the game and I was like, I love this game so fucking much. Oh, so flipping much.
Freaking
much. I love all these characters. And side thing, Undertale, I think, has the best character establishment.
Yes.
Mm. Every single character in that game felt so real.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I complete pacifist. I learn about all of their passions, interests, you know, their futures, how they end up if everything goes perfect.
The creamer went bye-bye.
Well, the creamer was all empty. But then, you know, I love the game so much, I wanted to go back and do the genocide. I got to Undyne, and I just... It wasn't even a problem of beating her. It was I couldn't bring myself to kill her.
Do you know what happens?
That's the thing.
Because every time she comes back,
ending is so sad.
Every time you kill her, she comes back until she eventually runs out of steam.
No, and she melts.
She melts, and she says, "I will still like I'm
still gonna kill you. I'm still gonna get you." She's so determined to get you. She melts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Undertale, and I'll tell you why.
Mm.
Like. That I played that game in a time when it was during quarantine and I had very little very little to like do and to like hold on to, and that game was so much like I got attached to the characters like you. Right. I spoke to everyone. Second run I ever did, I killed one Froggit.
Oh.
I killed one Froggit. And then Undyne figured out like, oh, she was so depressed that she couldn't save one monster, and I was like, what have I done? And until then, only runs I've ever done was neutral and pacifist. I did neutral once. Neutral essentially is you never spare anyone.
Right.
Basically, you only kill what you encounter. You don't go looking for them. You only kill what you encounter.
Yeah, and then genocide is take out everything.
Whenever you go to a checkpoint, it says like 7 left or something like that.
Yeah. Like at some point, they just like stop giving you little like incentives. It isn't fun anymore because it's a task.
Yeah.
The person that's possessing you, spoiler, Kara, they put you on a task. Right? You have to kill everything, and they will push you there, and they will make you stronger. And like at some point, it's such a like you can tell the other characters they're terrified of you.
Yeah.
Because you didn't go like did you play Past Undying?
I did not. I couldn't bring myself to play Past
Undying. It's the same feeling.
For genocide.
If you ever made it to Muffet in Metaton, or Metaton, however you say it, Muffet you kill in one hit. Metaton, there is an entire storyline. Alphys upgrades Metaton to the point that it is the like damage wise the strongest monster.
Right.
But it is like attack with defense enough. Is zero, because so, Alphys was so afraid, like was so afraid of you and so prioritized of just getting rid of you, she forgot to add defenses.
You know,
it shows the desperation.
You know what that actually that calls to mind like one of the things that I think is the most beautiful thing about Undertale.
They're real.
They're real, and every single decision in terms of a character's design or their motivations or the way that they act, it reflects a real, you know, fear or insecurity or a real part of yourself.
Yes.
And because of that, the characters, they feel so real. You know, Alphys and Undyne, like, that is a ship that will sail forever.
Absolutely.
You know? Like, and it's because they feel like such real characters, it's almost like I would rather ship people in Undertale than I would ship cartoon characters, exactly. Or even real life celebrities. Here's like,
yeah. They're multifaceted. You can go any path you want,
like,
and figure out new ideas about them and new personality traits and reveal themselves through different runs.
Like, here's a perfect example. I'm going to make this point, and maybe you won't agree with me. Sans and Toriel. Like, here, I'm going to explain it right from the beginning. Toriel, she saves you right in the beginning, right? Saves your life, takes you in, feeds you, gives you a nice home, offers for you to stay, but you can't progress. And that's the thing. You have no choice but to leave.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, that's, like, the tutorial. You can't stay. And it's tragic because she's a mother who lost her kids, who had lost dozens of kids, if you really think about it. I wouldn't say dozens, but, like, about 12.
Six. 12?
About a dozen kids. Because you got Azriel, Kara. That's two.
That's two.
And then
the other...
That's eight.
Okay.
Eight kids. Mm-hmm. So you would be her ninth child, theoretically. And you leave. And she's heartbroken. She's never returned. Because the thing is, at that point...
She can't handle knowing whether or not you're gone.
Exactly.
For good.
Right.
Like, she's like... Yeah. It's for her to let go.
Because if you promise to come back, then you not coming back means you perished.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because she's so afraid you're going to die to her ex-husband. And then you meet Sans. And at some point... Like, Sans lives relatively close to the gate that's actually locked shut.
Yeah.
By then, like, you can never go back.
Yeah, ever. I mean, him and Papyrus are the two people you meet at the start. Exactly. I'm pretty sure he's the first guy you meet. He's just in the forest hiding.
Yeah, he gives you, right? Shakes your hand, as whoopee cushion is, and ha, comedic relief. Now, here is the part that's like the big kicker.
In the diner, right?
Not in the diner. You go on a date with Sans. A date.
Oh,
he takes you out to dinner later on, in the Metaton Hotel.
Oh, you're not talking about the Papyrus date, right?
No.
I don't think I actually went on a Sans date.
Sans is a lot heavier of a character than you think he is, because at some point he sits you down and he explains, like, hey, you've been through a lot. And then he pauses and he explains to you, like, I made a promise to someone. And he's like, so he's a comedian, like, he makes jokes, and he goes to the gate to the ruins to practice his knock-knock jokes. And one day someone answers, and who do you think answers? Toriel. Mm-hmm. And she laughs at his jokes genuinely. And then, like, he keeps going back, and they're actually good friends, like, even though they don't really know each other. And one day, he goes to the door. And the knocks, and she's there, but she's very sad. And she's like, hey, someone's going to come out. Someone's going to, like, a human's going to walk out these doors. If you, like, when they do, take care of them. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I made a promise to someone that day. And here's the big thing. This is what he says. If I went to that door and no one answered, you'd be dead where you stand.
Yeah, because...
The chills, because it's dead silent. His eyes go black. This is the most serious he's ever been in the entire game. And that's when you realize...
No, there's another moment he's serious.
The diner.
No. Just before the actual Sans fight in Genocide.
No, I mean, like when the first time he's serious.
Oh, right. Because when you kill Papyrus, and when you get to Sans for the fight, he says, like, you killed my brother, prepare to die. Like,
yeah.
He is fully
suicidal. There's actually more to that I'm going to get into.
Right.
But, like, the whole thing between Sans and Toriel, the fact that he cared, like, someone acknowledged him and took him that seriously for so long that he would have murdered someone he didn't even know yet just because that person didn't answer the door, that is crazy. That just shows, like, at the end of the day, how it shows us a side of Sans that's a bit more, like, closed off because he found someone he genuinely relates to and is that afraid of losing that person. That the one person he has so little information on, he's willing to just annihilate because someone didn't answer the door. That is incredible.
It's also fascinating to see that, like, you as you experience that, you're like, wow, he feels like a real person. And then you think about it for like a little bit and you realize that that is such an irrational way to act.
Yes.
And it is indicative of, like, the fears and anxieties and the, like, priorities that people make.
Yes.
Like, humans make that are irrational.
Especially when it, like...
It makes Sans so much more human because he's irrational now, you know?
Yeah. Not even human. You say human, but at the end of the day, one thing that everyone looks over when it comes to that game, the monsters treat the humans in the same way that humans would treat monsters in real life. Oh, there's something in the closet. It's a monster for them. Oh, there's something in the closet. It's a human. Right. They're afraid of them. They're literally out hunting them.
Yeah.
So the fact that Sans is so, like, open and inviting, but at the end of the day, he's still scared of you.
Mm-hmm.
And afraid that you're going to hurt the people that he loves. That just... Yes, it's irrational, but it's...
It makes the monsters feel more human than human.
Yes.
It's crazy. There's so much heart put into it. Okay, and now you're talking about the other part where Sans is thing.
Yeah, and the pillars. Pillar room.
Yeah.
The church, I think.
The judgment room.
That's I will say, I finished the neutral run.
Right.
And the thing is, you can kill Papyrus.
For the neutral run, do you have to kill Toriel?
Yes.
So
you have to kill everyone you encounter.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can't spare them. Yeah.
He doesn't. Like, that threat is, at the end of the day, it's empty. Because Toriel doesn't answer the door when he goes back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that means he wouldn't really kill you because he's that scared.
He's scared of you.
Well, I wouldn't say that it's a thing about fear. It's
also motivation.
Yeah, motivate, like...
Because he knows at the end of the day that you are going to win the game because he knows it's a game.
He knows it's a game.
Yeah. So he knows that no matter what, your determination or whatever holds you and allows you to keep reloading save files, no matter what you do, you're always going to triumph over him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No matter what he throws at you.
That is a part of why he and Flowey are both so terrified of you.
Yeah.
But also, I think that even if Sans weren't aware of, like, the fact that you could reload saves or whatever, if Sans thought that you and him were neck and neck, I feel like he still wouldn't try to kill you if you, like, killed Toriel. Because, like, he would be so just destroyed.
Yes.
Like, if you're doing a genocide run, you're killing literally everyone, and he feels an obligation to fight you.
Oh, definitely. Here's the thing. But
in a neutral, he's just, like, he's so destroyed, he just can't fight, you know?
There's another part of it that's, like, he's almost indifferent to the deaths at that point, because if you really think about it, you've been there dozens of times before, even if that's the first time you're playing the game.
Right.
Like, in the context of the game, this isn't the first time you've played. Flowey says this, like, every time you finish the game, True Pacifist, Flowey says, you reset it. I know this isn't the first time you've done this, even if you're playing it for the first time. And here's the thing.
Oh, yeah.
What scared me the most during neutral, Sans never brings up Papyrus until the very end of that speech where he calls you a dirty brother killer. And then he disappears.
Yep.
Right.
Because you didn't follow through. You didn't kill everyone. He's like, I understand you were defending yourself, dirty brother killer. And then he leaves. And then you go kill, like, Asgore. Yeah. Like, at the end of the day, you're doing what you were motivated to do by Flowey, but not kill everyone, just defend yourself.
Right.
In Helix, you find a burrito in the toilet.
Oh, we're in Helix. We're back in Helix now. Yeah. Sweet.
Sorry. From Warrior to Undertale to, like...
Full circle.
Meet more...
In Helix, you find at the starting game where you go to his house, you go upstairs and you say, you check his toilet and you find a burrito in there.
I mean, you find hair in the sink.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you play Helix too.
No.
Oh.
Yeah. So, basically, I mean, it feels wrong to go from such a deep understanding of game to Helix.
I mean, Helix is an anti-game. Funny There's face. So much to explore
I
there,
will
too.
Say, I will
That's
say,
a good point, but
if you look at Deltarune, a lot of the monsters in Deltarune look like that.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
But I feel like it's more of the anti-game in the sense of, like, haha, look, it's
not fun. What you thought it was.
It's making fun of a game rather than making, like, a more deep, complex...
It looks like a parody of Earthbound. Yeah. If anything, because of the way you're walking and everyone's falling behind you, and exactly. I could make the same.
I mean, Pokemon-y too, right?
Yeah, Pokemon like Dungeon.
It's just your traditional RPG kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was like, made in RPG Maker.
The first to do it was Earthbound, and the way that the map is set up. If you look at Earthbound, it's very blocky. It's very narrow. You're walking, and you're all like clustered together. If you look at Helix, I don't know if it's okay like for you to pull it up. If you look at the way they're walking, like look at the battle thing. It looks like Earthbound.
Kind of, yeah, except it's way more stylized, you know? It's not like 8-bit.
Trippy even.
But like the way you get into combat, like it's just the character in front and four squares for all the characters, that's Earthbound. That is an Earthbound graphic. Look, all your characters in the bottom, that's Earthbound.
Right.
Exactly. I do agree with you.
Look at the background, it's all moving. That's either Mother 3 or Earthbound. This is a very Earthbound game. This almost feels like an Earthbound parody.
It's kind of also like Earthbound, because like in Earthbound, you kill God.
Yeah. Like, sorry to, like, go back to it, but I love how much, like, Earthbound isn't that big of a game when you think of, like, all of its other, like sister games in terms of Nintendo, but the fact of the matter is, Earthbound walked for all those other games that we speak so fond of to run.
Right.
Like, part of me wants to go back to Undertale and Deltarune and just... like play Earthbound on like my Switch and then go back to Undertale through and so just cool. just tie and just see and just see what's
just see how the just inspiration see, kind of flowed into that original game.
I mean, like sometimes we have to trace the like lineage and history of the progression of, you know, whatever. Like I have found that when I get really into a genre of music, if I'm noticing myself listening to a specific genre over and over, or finding a lot of artists, like I trace it back and I look at where its roots are. Yeah. And I feel like that actually makes me appreciate that genre so much more, because I can see where those like small changes and modifications
Definitely.
That were barely noticeable or like very tiny that like compounded and accumulated over the years to like turn, you know, rock and roll into punk rock, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
can you use an example?
Yeah, of course.
A band that I got into a lot was Pantera.
Ooh, yeah, we love Pantera.
We love Pantera.
I mean, we hate the lead singer.
Oh, yeah.
We love Pantera, we don't love Pantera's lead singer.
We don't like Phil Anselmo.
Separate the art from the artist.
Oh, definitely.
Ladles and germs, everybody.
Let's go into their music. Let's go into their music. So, a big driving force when it came to Pantera's sound was their guitarist, Dimebag Darrell. And a big influence of theirs, there were two very specific sources that came into, or three, I would say, that came into play when it came to Pantera. There was blues, Van Halen, and Kiss. Kiss is
the three genres.
The three genres.
Pick your side.
Pick your starter Pokemon. So anyway, Kiss is an influence that a lot of people got drawn to, so we're going to forget about that.
Yeah.
Now, if you listen to Van Halen's guitar style and the way he played and how articulate and fast and just bombastic he was, and you listen to Dimebag, you're going to hear the similarities. Now, where blues comes in, Pantera is a groove metal band. Now, groove metal takes two very specific influences and pushes them together. Heavy metal and blues, and that makes you that gives you groove metal, because it takes the cadence and the speed and the lyrics and the scale and the
technical proficiency
exactly
with the guitar
of blues and makes it heavier. And if you listen to Dimebag's guitar playing, no matter how fast he's moving, it's if you were to run it through clean guitar, he's playing blues.
Yeah.
And
that's wild.
That's crazy. And speaking of wild, you know another guitarist that does that? Dimebag Darrell's best friend, Zakk Wylde, the guy who played with Ozzy Osbourne after what's his face? I forget his name. What's his name?
The significantly less wild guitarist.
Yeah. No, definitely not.
At least in surname.
Yeah, at least in...
Anyway, but the guy that played guitar before Zakk Wylde, he tragically died, but Zakk Wylde also plays a lot of blues. If you listen to his band Black Label Society, all of his solos are in the blues scale. So... if you like, I listen to Van Halen and Black Label and Pantera, and I've been listening to blues every now and then, and I've been looking back and I'm like, oh my god, I know where they got it from.
Yeah, and I, just to like, kind of build off your point, I had nothing to build off the point with, but
we gotta figure something out now.
Just to build off your point, like it is super cool, like we. have been knowing that, you know, genres evolve from other genres, and like it all, like basically every modern day rock
something comes from something.
Goes that back to like blues and jazz, right? But it's really weird that we think about genres in this super hard distinction of like, this is punk, like this is lines. Folk punk, this is heavy metal, this is thrash, this is hardcore. Like, it's on one hand, it's really interesting that we would separate things like that, but on the other hand, it's really cool seeing things that
they don't align with that like notion.
Like seeing someone playing folk punk versus, I don't know, pop punk, like there could be two, or folk punk versus indie punk. If someone who didn't really know much about the punk subgenres listened to both of them, they'd probably say they sound super similar. Someone who's more well-versed in specifically punk could listen to both of them and draw the history back between the two types of genres to completely different things. Like, sure, they all go back to the overarching, like, jazz and blues, but folk punk could draw more on maybe a fiddle or, I don't know, like, specifically lyricism and accompanying that lyricism, whereas indie punk could draw more on the, you know, things that were common between independent musicians back in like the early 2000s, 2010s.
Yeah.
I just think it's super duper cool that these things that seem so much closer together when you don't pay attention are actually farther apart than blues and rock.
Yeah.
Like, that is wild.
Yeah, that is Zach Wild.
I remember what the guy's name was. Randy Rhodes.
Randy Rhodes.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
He wasn't as wild, but he was definitely more road smart.
No, he wasn't. He died in a car accident.
Randall Rhodes did not live up to his name.
That's crazy. Okay, back to Helix.
He lived up to his name. So, I'm going to spoil the ending because it's not an ending, all right? Here's what happens.
Anti-ending to an anti-game?
Wow.
Dude. No. Here's what happens, right? So, you are trying to fight... You are a group of anarchists who are trying to fight the Moon Lord Gibby. So, your main...
Gibby!
The main character...
Gibby!
Gibby!
What's Gibby?
There is an actual explanation to that.
Yeah,
you're
killing the Moon Lord Gibby.
Because your main character's name is Wayne, Waning Moon, Gibbous.
Okay.
That's cool. Right?
Okay.
So, you and your group of comrades are trying to get to the moon and kill the Moon Lord, who's actually been scrambling people's speech, which is a kind of in-world explanation to why the entire dialogue is controlled by a text generator.
That's interesting that you'd say that. Actually, I'm not gonna make that joke.
Make the joke.
Often the word comrade is associated with Soviets.
And they went to the moon first.
They didn't go to the moon first. They won the space race.
Oh, right. Yep.
With the dog. No?
But dog. So Laika was the first living being in space. Yes. Though she did die in space.
So she's technically also the first to die in space.
The space race wasn't actually...
The monkey.
I don't think that she was the first to die in space.
No, the monkey.
There were a bunch of monkeys, and there were a lot of people that just got launched up in, like, tin cans.
And fireworks.
A lot of people died in space.
Next episode.
The first rockets were straight up just tin cans attached to bombs. Like,
so
they
the
did
Challenger.
Not.
Oh, yeah.
They did not.
If they
really
come back down, they come back down to
Challenger.
The Challenger. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Dude, Big Bird almost died, man. Like, an entire generation. Big Bird was supposed
Bird
to be
on the Challenger.
What? But then I don't know if it's the Challenger. It might be the Challenger. But Big Bird was supposed to be on one of the later
was it an episode of Sesame Street?
Thingies. No, it wasn't an episode of Sesame Street. It was just there was a raffle or like a survey on who the general public wanted to send up to space, because they were sending up like a teacher, they were sending up like just a bunch of everyday like working people, because
and
they were trying
the
to come up
that
with
unknowingly they were sending them up to die.
Well, they didn't plan on the thing.
Oh, obviously
going up.
No, yeah,
but
like
the
I'm
reason
saying,
that Big Bird didn't actually go on the Challenger and wasn't sent up to space is because they didn't think to make the spacesuit go around, like, fit the form of the outfit.
That's such a dumbass reason, sorry.
And then the Challenger exploded, and then children... Big Bird! And then children across the states weren't tuned in on Sunday morning to... Or Saturday morning to watch Big Bird in the Challenger. So a generation was not traumatized, but they almost were. But what I was trying to say was...
Imagine Big Bird comes back. Imagine Big Bird was on the ship, and then he comes back on Sesame Street. Like,
he just floats down.
The ship blows up.
I survived.
The ship blows up, but he's... Of everyone who survived, freaking Big Bird.
No, the ship blows up, but he's part chicken. So he does the Minecraft chicken float down from the stratosphere.
It takes him 10 episodes to get down.
No. Throughout 10 episodes, there's just a dot in the sky that gets bigger. So Laika was sent up to space. Let's get back to Laika. Laika was sent up to space, and she died there. Big, sad, very... They actually brought her back down, but she died on the way in.
Oh, like incinerated.
Yeah. But Yuri Gagarin, was the first man to go up to space, orbit the Earth, and come back down.
Uh-huh.
And he was straight up shot up in a tin can. Craziest thing is, this was back when the Soviet Union was like two big cities and everything else is just farmland in the middle of nowhere. This man landed in just a random farm. And there are videos, like there's a video from his shuttle where, or there's like an interview, I think, that the owner of that property was being interviewed for, and she was like, yeah, I fully thought that was an alien, because I don't have television, I don't have radio, I have no way of knowing that they're actually sending someone into space, and this random big box crash lands on my farm, and a random guy walks out wearing a weird suit, shouting at me in Russian.
No, he opens up the vault, and it's just like...
just an alien mask on his face.
Can we find it? Yuri Gagarin.
How do you spell that?
Okay.
Anyway, yeah. I just want to quickly explain the ending of this game,
yes,
right?
Yes, of course.
So, you are getting about, like, say, you have about 5,000 bucks in the game at this moment, right? And the key to get into the spaceship, to go to space, is $999,000 in order to get the key and go to space, right?
Yeah.
So, you have to go to a laboratory where they make monsters into money out of test tubes.
What?
You press the lever and it turns the thing inside the test tube into money. And you take the money out and you just load it. You have about like $1 million now. You go back, you buy the key and like 1,000 hot dogs. And you go to space and you kill Gibby. And that's the end of the game. And you come back down and this is the first time you level up in the entire game. Normally you have to use like items to level up your mightiness or your willpower or your flesh, right?
Your flesh?
Your hit points. That's what they call hit points. Okay.
level up your flesh.
Just get another layer on there.
Yeah. But it's the first time in the entire game where the pop-up... You're this character level up in the entire game. And you come crashing back down and you just are able to roam the entire world at like this insane level where you can kill anything.
That's crazy.
It's not an ending at all.
I'm very sorry for the side tangent, but Daniel, yes. the champ, has created a Jesus-like crown for me.
Oh, I love it.
It just needs some thorns, but...
You and I drinking poison from the same man.
Can we dial back the immaturity? Because I have something very heartfelt to say.
Of course. Dial back the immaturity.
Yeah, like... You guys are being really immature, and I'm trying to be heartfelt, but I would love to say, this gift, I love it, but I hate it at the same time, because it reminds me of that time that we were drinking the poison from the same vine, and by we, I mean man, and by man, I mean me, and by poison, I mean pilk, I mean kilk, but... there's the lady. I said, Granny, stop. He's speaking Russian.
Put it there.
He's probably human.
Put it there.
He got the shotgun out and he was like,
no, dude, it was the Soviet Union. The military confiscated everyone's shotgun.
Okay, there's 2 minutes left.
There's 2 minutes. Oh, man. We've done that a whole lot of nothing.
Yo, you just tied it back. Oh, that was masterful.
Ooh. Our outro is just the song in reverse. No,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Dude, we gotta sing the song as an outro, dude.
Oh, I'd love to.
With
yo, can we swap out every single adjective?
Jesus, for, Jesus, for... Jesus.
See, this is the proof that they're listening to us. There's literally a sans fight in 2.2 right here.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Google's listening
to us. No, keep in mind, we have microphones on right now.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys do know that, like, Google has been caught, like, blatantly just
listening to you,
stealing all of your information.
Well, yeah,
you could take the SIM card out of your phone, put it on airplane mode, you know, turn it off fully shut down.
Yeah.
And like, there was a guy that did every single possible step short of breaking his phone into pieces, and then when he loaded it back up, he looked at like the there's like, I think there's some sort of website where you can track like what information Google has picked up off your phone. It tracked the exact route that he walked on. It tracked the stuff that he said. It like he was getting targeted advertising for like everything from the places he was going to just like the random conversations he was having with baristas.
Hi, Google.
Which is just,
hi, Google.
That is so intense. That is insane because turning on airplane mode like saves you.
Shuts it all off.
Or you think straight up just like denying like not giving the your phone access to like track any of your stuff, you'd think that would be it, but that's just words. Like, wow, that's,
and by the way, this is Helix 2.
That's what Helix
2
looks
like.
That's
so cool.
So he basically upgraded to Unity now because he's like, okay, the RPG maker wasn't enough, so he upgraded to Unity.
That's a beautiful game.
You know what, Paul?
Oh, wow.
Paul?
Yeah. That's like some Star Fox stuff.
I'm being so for real.
It's also
like when we're out of school, do you want to just like pick a week when I just... Do you want to just run through a bunch of RPGs?
That'd be so sick.
And like, no, like all, like maybe all three of us too. Do you want to just like play RPGs and like deep dive in all of them? Like seriously.
I would be super interested in learning the lore of RPGs and watching you guys play it. The thing with me is my mind just can't work with RPGs. Like Undertale was a... Undertale was just an extreme case where the game was so good that it kind of overpowered my dumb brain being dumb. But the thing with RPGs is you're putting so much of your soul into a game with real fleshed out characters where you're following a story and actually like developing stuff. I don't have the emotional reserves. Why does his face look like...
I know, he's just going
to
dissolve.
I don't have the emotional reserves to actually play an RPG, but I would love to...
You can
like,
watch.
Yeah, I mean, if we fully like did streams or just recorded it and posted it on YouTube or something, just like sitting down all together playing a game and like talking about it.
Discord.
I personally prefer in person, but anything works for me, yeah.
Because the thing is, anyway... we'll discuss this later, but it's the end of the show. Let's like, let's play it out.
Darkness and just.
So I had a fun time, guys.
Thank you for coming, Paul.
Paul,
appreciate you coming.
Assist me on the show
right now.
We're leaving the bar.